Welcome to Visible by Numbers with your host, Allison Bachman.
Hello and welcome to Visible by Numbers being broadcast on beautiful BBS Radio, the number one radio station on the internet. And this is your host, Allison, and thank you for joining me this evening. It's great to have you in the listening audience. I'm pleased to tell you that my guest this evening is Lawrence Joseph, and he is a journalist and science consultant and has written about science, nature, and religion for the New York Times, Salon.com, and the Huffington Post. His research on the science and mythology of Apocalypse 2012 during the past several years has led him to work with scientists, shamans, philosophers on five continents. He is also the author of two very informative books, very scientifically based, and they're actually entertaining books on 2012, and it's kind of hard to believe that it's remotely possible to find the humor in a book written about an apocalypse, but somehow he has you laughing with his wit and his sarcasm throughout the books. His first book is Apocalypse 2012, A Scientific Investigation into Civilization's End, in which Joseph appraised the likelihood of planet-wide catastrophe in 2012 by presenting very convincing scientific evidence about the looming chaos and even mass extinction. His second book, Aftermath, A Guide to Preparing for and Surviving Apocalypse 2012, he answers the most pressing questions that arise from the investigation. What can we do to mitigate the coming cataclysm? When I picked up his book, Apocalypse 2012, I was mesmerized, and I'm really delighted to have the opportunity to talk to Lawrence about both of his books this evening. Please visit his website. It's www.LawrenceEJoseph.com now and throughout the show to gather more information. You can actually find a direct link to his website right on the Visible by Numbers page on right off of BBS Radio. Because, you know, I want you to go look at his website, because right now I'd like to welcome him to the show and get the conversation started. Hi, Lawrence, how are you?
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's absolutely my pleasure. Your book was mesmerizing. Well, actually, both your books are mesmerizing. But I can remember Apocalypse 2012. I couldn't even put it down. I was just immersed in it from beginning to end. It is just an amazing book. But I also seem to think that I've seen you, I don't know whether it was Nat Geo or the History Channel, but haven't you also been featured on some specials about 2012?
Oh, sure, a bunch of them. History Channel, Discovery, Sci-Fi, and CBS News, ABC. Yeah. You know, it's the topic is certainly gathered a lot of interest, and I've been fortunate enough to enjoy myself on a couple of those shows.
Sure. Well, I got to ask you. On August 2nd, there was news of a massive solar flare, and that was, I think they called it the first major Earth-directed eruption in quite some time, that actually triggered aurorae, which were seen in far northern latitudes where normally it's not seen. And given all the scientific research and how much you cover this topic in your books about the upcoming solar maximum, what did you think when you heard about that, and how many times did your phone ring with somebody calling to tell you about it?
Well, it reminded me of the little boy who cried wolf. Because this actual set of solar flares was pretty small, but the hype was pretty large.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why this set, and I guess it's the first set of flares to really come out and hit the Earth after the deep, deep minimum we've been in, meaning the minimum means that the sun has been having barely any activity. So, you know, it kind of woke folks up, but there are C class, M class, and X class. X class being the largest, and this was a C class. This was 100th of the power of an X class, and about 1,000th of the power of the X class that would be required to really do us some damage.
Sure.
But you know, you take advantage of what captures imagination and say, look, okay, now this one, we were in no danger from. but there have been many much larger and a few that were many orders of magnitude larger, and those are the ones we have to worry about. The phone rang off the hook, the emails mounted up, but
A big deal in your book, right?
Well, not this one, but you know, it's the timing was good. I had an op-ed piece come out in the New York Times today, and the piece doesn't tie it to this particular flare, because you know what's big news today might be forgotten the day after tomorrow, especially in something like that. But the whole issue is really, really gathering great attention. Is getting hot, forgive the pun on the sun, but that's what's happening.
Well, you know, if you look at my first research when I started looking into solar maximum, and I started doing some research on the internet, if you actually go to the NASA site itself, it says there's a solar storm warning, that even they anticipate a very intensified solar maximum. And for our listeners, the people that are listening to conversation, like one of the key elements when considering 2012 and considering the potential things that may be creates a very severe disturbance on the planet, number one on the list, I think, is really the solar maximum that's coming up and the potential of what this could do to the Earth and to humanity. So, but it's actually on the NASA site, solar storm warning. They're anticipating, you know, very severe. And that comes from, you know, I would assume a fairly legitimate source.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Your book, yeah. You, what I loved about your books, and I guess I'm not going to be like the sky is falling. I'm not one of those people that jump on the old bandwagon of you know, the apocalypse. However, I believe in always keeping an open mind, and I say, bring me the facts, bring me the science, show me the science. And what I, as a human being and as a person, enjoyed about your books was that you really actually went and talked to so many scientists and really got down to some serious facts and things to consider, whether or not there is, you know, even if we take the 2012 off the plate and just say, okay, let's just look at the future. These scientific things that you covered in your books, you know, they certainly make someone arch an eyebrow.
Well, you know, as you don't like to jump on the bandwagon, I don't like to claim my life has changed. I'm not one of those given to dramatic statements or, you know, to claims of divine revelation. But I have to say that this all became deadly serious to me in December 2008. When the National Academy of Sciences came out with its report on severe space weather. And in that report, which was really just, I think, a groundbreaking piece of research, they found that if we were to get hit by a solar storm of the size that hit us in 1859 or 1921 and perhaps one or two others, if we were to get hit by one of those today, up to 100 million people could lose electricity for months or years.
Mm-hmm.
And
people don't think about that. What does that mean, to lose electricity for months a year? But that puts everything in a complete and total standstill.
Oh, my gosh. It's not just telecommunications, although, of course, that would be a terrible, terrible. But water and fuel would run out for in many, if not most cases, because the pumps are electric. Refrigeration.
Sure. Have you ever tried to, you know, if a store lost electricity, they stop selling things because nobody knows how to take money without a cash register or without, they just close it down because they don't have electricity. You wouldn't even be able to get food to the stores, you know,
no.
Even to replenish supply. It would be catastrophic in that sense alone.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that you wouldn't be able to flush your toilet. I mean, it goes on and on, right?
Right. And then, you know, after a week or two, you get things like unavoidable meltdowns at nuclear power plants because, you know, you can't just unplug those things. Sorry, it's not funny, but sometimes I have this whistling in the dark need to laugh when I'm frightened. Today's editorial in the Times that I wrote was all about that, about how, you know, electricity is the cornerstone technology. It's the one that everything else depends on. Somebody asked me, so it would be like going back into the, you know, the pre-electric days. I said, no, it'd be a lot worse because those folks knew how to live without electricity. They didn't have it, so they didn't grow dependent on it. I don't. Exactly. You know, I mean, there are a hearty few among us, I imagine, who do well, but most of us, you know, depend on it in so many ways. And
exactly.
Even if you've been in a blackout for a couple of days, or, you know, even just a day, you know the inconvenience of it, just for
right.
months or years.
Sure.
And Lord,
and if it's going to be in the wintertime, yeah. or even if during cold climates, I mean, a lot of people depend on that to stay warm, you know,
you
electricity. So that
yeah.
you have a lot of people that would be freezing. So there's no question to, but I don't think people can wrap their minds around just how much losing your electric, and how at risk our electrical grid is, and how these solar storms can actually create the catastrophe of 2012. I mean, it literally would be catastrophic. But that's just one of the many, many points. One thing that I did want to kind of bring up to you, because this is something, this is a thought that came through my head, and if we take all the prophecies, and obviously with prophecies, you know, you have the Mayans, the Hindus, the Hopi Indians, you have Edgar Cayce, Nostradamus, the Bible, everybody weighing in. There seems to be a lot of evidence pointing to this specific date and time. But if you take the prophecy off the table, and if you just consider, let's just say, 10% of the world's population believes that 2012 it spells disaster. So if you take 10% of the population of the Earth, there's 6.7 thereabouts billion people, so that's 670 million people that would believe that this is possible. So if you have 670 million people believing that the end of the world is coming in 2012, obviously you're going to have 670 million people behaving badly. When you look at the amount of information that's on the internet, you know, if you Google 2012, there's 13 million websites, okay, and then we have magazines, mainstream newspaper articles, television, radio, and this is only going to build in momentum. And as we approach 2012, just that alone, if you think of, if everyone thinks, every man for themselves, I mean, it's not like we can leave the planet in orderly fashion. I mean, obviously, if such a thing was going to happen, we're going to have to endure it. So what worries me really is the behavior of humanity when they're fearful.
Well, you're afraid it'll, in a sense, become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly.
And, you know, I've struggled with that a lot, because on the one hand, you don't want to create or contribute to that sort of potential mayhem. And on the other hand, one has a duty to point out salient facts, particularly if you know, the danger
sure.
is part of it. And, I mean, the way I think about it is that fear is justified when danger is imminent. If danger is not imminent, then it's a wrong and harmful thing to do to whip up fear.
Sure.
And I get people who say, well, don't you think the government knows about all this and will take care of it? And, you know, it's funny. I started my research in 2004, which was during the Bush administration, which was not particularly, an
adept.
Administration. Yeah, I didn't think that.
at handling catastrophe. I mean.
No, they, yeah. I mean,
yeah, because
Katrina,
if you look at Katrina.
Yeah.
Or even if you look at 9/11 and that was like chaos for the longest time.
I don't think that that was their strong suit, shall we say. And then
no, not really.
I'm hopeful but not confident that the current administration might have a better grasp of things. Their one test seems to have been the oil spill in the Gulf, and I don't think anybody's showering them with flowers, but maybe they did all right. I don't know.
Right.
But you know, I'm older than perhaps a lot of your listeners, and I don't remember certainly Franklin Delano Roosevelt, but I grew up hearing stories of him, and he was a Democrat, and I also heard great things of Dwight Eisenhower, who was a Republican.
Sure.
And if we'd had that caliber of leadership, I would say, okay, trust that they'll take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once burned
not feeling so confident.
No. And now we're having a real battle. It's come down right to the House and the Senate. there's a way to protect our electrical power grid from these storms that are going to climax in 2012 or whenever the next big storm hits. We think of 2012 because it's the next red zone, the likely
sure.
time of ferocious and frequent storms, but it could mm-hmm. come anytime. But you know, that's the odds are late 2012 to early 2013. And as I said, the National Academy of Sciences pointed out that the electrical power grid could be shorted out. It's like a giant lightning rod waiting to be struck by one of these things.
Sure.
And there's a way to protect the power grid. It's actually pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
This is not just a doomsday prophecy without an answer.
Sure.
I've been writing for 25 years, and I never thought my life's work would add up to surge suppressors. You know, it doesn't have that romantic, exalted ring, you know. I'm the surge suppressor messiah, you know.
We put them on our computers, you'd think they put it on our power grid, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, and that's the whole idea. And this idea, however humble and kind of deflating it sort of is, was presented to the United States House of Representatives, which voted in June unanimously to do this. This is astonishing. Those folks these days in this partisan, poisonous climate won't cross the aisle to perform the Heimlich maneuver, much less, you know, to join unanimously to votes for something like this. And so I thought, okay, I celebrated prematurely. I thought, okay, the House passed it unanimously. It might not go unanimous in the Senate, but but it'll pass. You know, it's so obvious that we have to protect our supply of electricity.
Sure.
435-0, I think, was the vote in the House. I know it was unanimous. But the Senate bill, for some godforsaken reason, stripped out any language regarding protecting the power grid from solar blasts. And they had the perfect opportunity to use the same language as the House bill.
Mm-hmm.
They specifically omitted it. So now the bill that's going before the Senate has nothing, no protection, zero for the power mm-hmm. grid from this incredible threat. So
mm-hmm.
it's
a real threat. I think I read somewhere that they have a capability based upon the behavior of the sun and also past information to predict within 95% accuracy. I'd say that was pretty darn good accuracy of the intensity of the upcoming solar maximum. And this, I believe this was on the NASA website.
Mm-hmm.
95% accuracy, they're literally saying the sky is going to fall, meaning there is going to be disruptions. It seems to me that it's a no-brainer.
Yes, it really does, doesn't it? It's obvious to anybody who's intelligent and open-minded like you will just sort of sit down and consider the facts. But for some reason, our august senators are not even, you know, putting it up for it didn't get voted out of committee. The full Senate will not be considering this language. There's one hope.
Mm-hmm.
That when the Senate bill houses and the Senate bill passes, whatever bill does mm-hmm. pass, whenever it does mm-hmm. pass, and the House bill get together, they have a conference and they make a compromise. And that was the point of the editorial today. It's like, hey, folks, you know, make this deal. Make this compromise.
Right.
Work
make it
together.
Happen.
Yeah.
Right, because otherwise they're literally going to be the government of nothing, you know, because... You know, I would think it would make their job infinitely more difficult
yes.
without their electricity.
You know, I mean, mayhem aside, wouldn't we kick ourselves all the way to hell if we passed up this relatively simple surge suppressor fix? I mean, it's not cheap, but it's in the hundreds of millions, not hundreds of billions of dollar range.
Right,
you know,
and considering what we waste money on, it seems to be a good deal.
Yeah, or should we just give another billion to AIG? I mean, you know.
Yeah, really. Let's just give it to a banker or maybe an investment company or something. Let's do that instead, okay? But it's not, and I know that we're focusing on the solar flares and the reason, and the sun and the solar maximum. And again, our listeners, you know, the books go beyond that with scientific evidence. I mean, you've literally approached everything scientifically, everything from the global warming, the melting glaciers, the earthquakes. Recently, there was an article, and I thought it made a heck of a lot of sense, and they were talking about the melting of the ice sheets and how that the, when water is frozen in place, it has a mass and a weight. But when it melts, that weight is taken off that particular crust of the planet.
That's right.
And then the weight disperses. And so that may allow the plates, the other plates, and on the Earth's crust to actually be able to move because the weight's been redistributed, which could be why we're having these tremendous earthquakes. And I actually wrote the USGS and I asked them about the increasing, what seems to be increasing magnitudes, meaning 6.9, 7.2s and higher, and what is normal. And they said that they were on tap, that they expected to have the possibility of 37 point and above this year alone.
Good Lord.
And that they expect it to be very active for earthquakes. Now, so the global warming actually could be attributing to the earthquakes. And I think one of the interesting things about your first book is you made the kind of like, well, we've got the people that study volcanoes, we've got the people that study earthquakes, we've got the people that study global warming, but nobody's talking, they all see warning signs, but nobody's talking to each other. How each one could be affecting the other. And I thought that was a really interesting aspect of your book. I mean, that was something I picked up on right away and went, wow, that's amazing that they're not all meeting. And but I thought that they would just put all the best minds in the world together and they'd figure this thing out, but they're not even talking to each other.
It's a sad fact of tenure that no one gets their tenured professorship or moved up to full professorship or whatever it is they're shooting for in the academic hierarchy. Rarely, if ever, does anyone get that by interdisciplinary collaboration. It's just the way the tracks are set up. The more you achieve in your specific given field, the more you will succeed. Interdisciplinary stuff is always like out of passion or general interest or whatever, but it doesn't ring up the brownie points that lead to a comfortable life.
And so you don't share your information with other scientists.
It's not that you're unwilling. It's just that you know everybody's stressed for time, and you know everybody's got their family issues and their money issues, whatever. And if you do share your information with scientists who are outside of your area, you're doing it on your own dime and your own time.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so you're not getting rewarded. And I can give you an extreme example of this. Even within a field, I attended a solar physics conference where you had 100 top scientists from NASA and Harvard and the Naval Observatory and from Japan and Europe met to discuss the state of the sun and present their work and sunspots and solar storms. They met during the second wildest week ever recorded on the face of the sun. I happened to be at this conference, just pure luck. And none of them stopped even to discuss with the other, not during the conference, not even during the coffee breaks, what was going on. The sun was going wild. I mean, really. Months later, there were whole newsletters devoted to this topic of what happened on the sun. It set records in so many ways.
Did it send a solar blast to the Earth of radiation or something?
Yes, it did.
It reached here so quickly? Yeah.
It hit hard. It followed immediately after Katrina and before Rita and Wilma. So we had, the sun was going wild. The storms were happening on the sun and storms were happening on the Earth at the same time. No one thought to ask, is there a connection? I mean,
is there a connection? Right.
You know, I mean, you cannot understand the behavior of the Earth without its relationship to the sun. And I'm sorry for getting back to this again. I will get off the sun, but
okay.
It's like you can't understand Earth life on Earth without understanding its relationship to the sun anymore. You can watch your TV without plugging it in. Because
right,
we are so plugged into the sun. All of our energy comes from there. And
right.
These folks couldn't even though they're in the same field, they were all solar physicists, they couldn't bring themselves to sit down and just say, hey, did you see? The sun's gone nuts. What do you think?
Well, yeah, right. Well, listen, Larry, we do have callers that call into the program, and probably someone that wants to ask you a question. So do you mind if we take a caller?
Of course not.
Okay, wonderful. Do we have a caller? Hello? They might have hung up because they called in a little while ago. Do we have somebody on the line? Okay. Sorry, I heard a beep, and I was pretty sure we had somebody, but they might have we kind of went on with our conversation. So what I'll do really quick here is we have Larry here for the next 15 minutes at least, so I'm going to give out the numbers for the station. And the toll-free numbers are 888-815-9756, 530-327-7602, 530-776-5185, and 530-413-4522. And if you have a question or a comment or you'd like to speak to Larry, by all means, feel free to call in and we'd be happy to take your call. But like I say, we've only got him here with us for about 15 more minutes, so make sure you put those calls through. Okay, so, yeah, because I remember getting back to what we were saying, I was reading about how we actually were somewhat, I guess, radiated, or it was actually radiation that came from that one during that time, that solar blast that happened at that time. It hit the Earth so quickly, kind of took everybody by surprise how quickly it was in our atmosphere. And if we, you know, and like I say, your books, like the magnetic field, the holes we have, yeah, and that in itself, you know, it's really kind of odd. Okay, our scientists discovered we have this massive hole in our magnetic shield. Do you want to discuss that just for a moment?
Sure, I'd love to, because it's so astonishing.
And that really ties into the solar as well, right?
It does. Basically, the Earth's magnetic field, which comes from the core, goes through the surface of the Earth and goes about a good 20,000 miles out into space, is what protects us from solar storms, from the solar radiation that, you know, comes from these storms. And you know, we've always counted on it, and there had been some discussion that the poles might be switching. Not that they're physically, the North Pole is going to move around the landmass to the south, but just the polarity from north to south to north. It might be switching, and that could cause some chaos. But nobody really paid much attention to that theory. It was generally advanced by sort of outlier scientists until, again, December 2008, the magic month for bad news, a squadron of five NASA solar research satellites flew quite unexpectedly through a giant pole-to-equator hole in the Earth's magnetic field. That same magnetic field is supposed to protect us from the solar blasts that we know are coming. I mean, the shields are down, Scotty.
Yeah, the shields are down.
And this was so astonishing that the project leader, the project was called Themis, he said it was so surprising it was as though the sun rose in the west.
Mm-hmm.
This took them so much aback, and it was so important because right at the time that we were discovering our electrical infrastructure is vulnerable to solar blasts, right at the time we're heading towards the solar climax of 2012, the shield that we're depending on to protect us
has is down.
A giant gaping hole. I mean, from pole to equator.
Exactly. Okay, listen, Larry, we do have that caller back, or we have another caller, so if you don't mind, I'm going to put a hold on the conversation, and let's see what people want to talk to you about. So who's calling, please?
This is Cheryl West from Oklahoma.
Hi, how are you? Do you have a question for Larry?
I've just been catching, like, the end of it. So what he was talking about, the solar blast and stuff, I was interested in that. But at the same time, hasn't our Earth... isn't it 1 second behind now? I was hearing something like that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, as a result of the earthquakes, particularly the one in Chile, we are a second behind. It's a fascinating development, but I don't think it endangers us particularly. And forgive me for being focused on the coming danger. But
no, I don't. I was just catching the last of it. I wish I would have heard the whole everything.
Just so you know, and all of our listeners know that both of Larry's books are available, and both of them would give you I think what I love about the books is it's not just information, but he's really, it's a scientific investigation, actually, and is talking to some very renowned scientists throughout the world. And the books are Apocalypse 2012, A Scientific Investigation into Civilization's End, and the second book, Aftermath, which is a guide to preparing for and surviving Apocalypse 2012. And you can, these might be two books. I know that they're both fascinating, really well written. The scientific evidence is there, and anything you ever want to know about it is written in the books. And you can locate both of those books on his website, which is lawrenceejoseph.com. Okay?
LawrenceEJoseph.com. Okay. I have one more question for him.
Sure.
On Jupiter, you know how they have the new, do you think that has anything to do with our Earth, the new spots on Jupiter? Is that really true that it's the plutonium that we shipped there?
No, that I don't believe.
Okay. I know that that there's another spot on Jupiter now, but...
Yeah, indirectly, I think it does. And it's... In my first book, Apocalypse 2012, I met with a Siberian scientist who believes that we are moving into an interstellar energy cloud. Basically, the solar system, the sun and all the planets are moving into a cloud of energy,
mm-hmm.
and that this is causing everything from the sun's excited state to the atmospheres of the outer planets, including Jupiter, to behave strangely, because the leading edge of the solar system is moving into this cloud. And while I found it interesting and I thought that he was a brilliant man, you know, he was a scientist in Siberia and his colleagues, I admit to a Western bias and kind of sort of treated it as more colorful than present danger. Well, fast forward to Christmas Eve 2009, when Nature magazine, which seems to be the most respected scientific journal in the world, published an article indeed confirming point by point that we are indeed our solar system, the sun, and all the planets, including the Earth, moving into an interstellar energy cloud. This was completely shocking. I mean, this article was published 15 years after the Siberian scientist first pointed it out. And basically, they just sort of waited for all the data to come in and publish it. He used partial data and his own intellect to see into the future. But that, I think, that cloud energy is causing lots of strange behaviors on other planets, including, I think, that the new spot on Jupiter. But more to the point, it's also exciting and disturbing the sun, and I think it may well be contributing to our own global warming, and will increasingly do so in the future.
Okay. Well, that's great news. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, caller, for calling in. Appreciate your input and your questions. Okay? I'm not sure if I heard another beep, but we might have another caller on the line, so let me just check and see if we have anybody else on the line. Anybody else that called in?
Hello?
Hi, who's this?
Hi, my name is Frank. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question for you. I thought it was interesting what you said, how there's different departments that aren't talking to each other, because I started seeing how everything is being compartmentalized in a sense that, like, you know, you take like a Secret Service agency or, you know, one of these corporations to prevent spying, they compartmentalize everybody, and like the person doesn't know what the next person right next to them in the next cubicle is working on. And the thing is that, you know, there's a guy, I forgot his name, who talks about the Fourth Reich and how that you can't understand the powers that be's intentions unless you take the alien aspect into consideration.
Hmm.
I look at it as you can't tell what the whole picture is until you look into the spiritual aspect of it all. Now, David Wilcox talks about convergence of all these different things. And there's a... I don't know if you ever heard of... Tom Kenyon. He just came out on Conscious Media Network with a video about what... you know, some message he receives from the Hathors about timelines and how, you know, we all heard of the law of attraction, right? And I saw something on some YouTube channel, Kamrusan, how not to use the law of attraction just to maintain, you know, get possessions that you want, like I want a new house or I want a new car, but to create your own reality. And that we're coming to a time where, and which is interesting how he said that there was an energy cloud. And I could feel energy with my hands, and I take this as universal energy that can do healing, and that we're entering an energy cloud, and that maybe there's a higher universal energy behind that in a spiritual aspect, because Tom Kenyon, in his Hathor's message, talked about that there's different timelines, and that we're coming to a time where these timelines are very close to each other, and we can hop the timelines, and that it's your intention can create the vibration to sync you with that timeline, so that you can. So you have to like change your raise your vibration, get in sync
sure.
with it, and take action, like the law of attraction, to create your reality. More importantly, with the law of attraction, to follow the right timeline. Because if everybody thinks it's doom and gloom, then everybody's creating that law of attraction energy of a law and doom and gloom scenario, and there is a timeline
right.
where that exists.
Well,
right. I get your question, but we only have Larry for like a few more minutes here. So what I'm going to do is
one quick last thing. I don't know how true this is or not, but I heard that in the days of Atlantis, that there was a majority of people that were slaves as opposed to people that were free. And when the majority of the will of the people on the planet doesn't have free choice, there's an impact of that on gravity. And that's why we're, with that whole straw man concept, that we have the appearance that we have free will when we really, there's a lot of freedoms taken away from us that we don't realize
okay.
how unfree we really are.
Okay. All right. All right. So I'm going to just, Larry, do you have any comments?
Very quickly, the Maya see it this way. They see that we have to go through, and we're going to go through, a time of danger and struggle in order to eventually pass through to that higher realm of understanding and consciousness that the Bacola talks about. So that's if nothing else, let me relate the Mayan prophecy regarding 2012 to that.
Right. And I agree, because I really, really believe that we've gone from a time that really was self-serving. It was is a time of me and greed, and it was a time of especially when we look at the 1900s, it really had to do with individuals. But we're moving into a time where we have to learn to cooperate with each other, where it's not about one country, but it's about the whole, all of us as a whole. And I think in order to cross over into a time where we regard the planet, where we take care of the planet, where we take care of each other, where there's peace on Earth, we have to go through some major changes to change, bring us to that point to where we want to create a better world, and one where we all are important. It's not just the few, it's not just the rich, it's not just, the business, it's not just the governments, but everyone's important. It's all about all of us. And in order to get there, change comes. And I think that a lot of the catastrophic things that are going on the planet really have to do with making us see things differently and to look at all of us as being important. So I agree with the caller. I agree with you, Larry. And I know that you have to go. I know that you had an engagement and you didn't have full hours. So do you have anything? I mean, we didn't even begin. We did not even begin. And listeners, we didn't even begin to broach the wonderfully discussed different aspects of the various different things that could potentially play in over the next several years that Larry wrote about in his books. We didn't even begin, so I'm sorry about that, Larry. But is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners and before you go?
Yeah. I always ask folks not to head for the hills, not to do anything extreme, to take refuge in your own life. And everybody, we all need to prepare, but prepare in a sane, calm, cooperative way. I believe every family should have a family emergency plan, just like in case some of this stuff does come down. Where are you going to go? Who are you going to meet? How are you going to get there if you can't communicate? Who's going to be in charge of water? Who's going to be in charge of basic stuff? It's the kind of thing to discuss, and it's not something to get done right all at once. But I think it's a good idea to be quietly prepared again within your own life. The idea of heading off to the hills doesn't work. Unless
okay.
So do that, get a plan, and everything, God willing, will be fine.
All right, Larry, well, I really wish that we had so much more time with you, but I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule, and thank you so much for writing the books. I really appreciate it, and I'm sure that our listeners appreciate it as well. So thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure, Allison. Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, dear.
Take care.
All right. All right, bye, Larry. All right, everyone. So once again, what I want to just point out is to go to www.lawrenceejoseph.com. And the book, Apocalypse 2012, Certainly, I think one is, there's an actual book out there on the, that's Idiot's Guide to 2012. I am not kidding you. There is such a book. But this book really, to me, I think where Larry deserves a great deal of recognition is the fact of the tremendous qualifications of the scientists that he spoke to. And not just in the United States, but in multiple countries, and the various different shamans and the various different aspects of looking at 2012 from every angle and looking at potentially what difficulties the planet faces and where those difficulties might come in and what are the various different scientists saying about it. So I think the one thing that he really deserves a great deal of credit for is the scientific approach. And that's what I truly appreciate about his book. But also, Larry is actually very funny. I mean, there are times where, it's hard to believe that you would laugh out loud in the middle of a book on the apocalypse, but actually, he's got a great sense of humor. He's very witty, and it's a very, funny book. And, if you're not terrifically scientifically bent, there will be certain aspects of the book where you might want to look at that and have to run that by yourself a couple of times, because there is, scientific lingo in there. But then again, it really, you have, I think, an obligation to at least look and entertain the facts. And that's what the book does. It entertains the facts. It is not prophecy per se. It is not conjuring up or intuiting or seeing a vision, but it's just simply the scientific earth facts about this planet that he approaches in his book. And so with that being said, I think you have an obligation to kind of look at the science and then make your own decision and come to your own conclusions about what potentially 2012 would hold. But the one thing that really, as I said earlier to Larry, that struck me is y'all can think back to Y2K, certainly, and I'm sure that each and every one of us knew somebody somewhere that, gathered up a whole bunch of supplies, were expecting to have the electric go out and the financial systems crash and food supplies and all these different things. And we knew somebody that was stocked up somewhere, but that was just a little glitch having to do with a computer system. This is far more, there's far more to consider. But we look at what's coming in the news, and I know that I'm 56 years old, okay? I've been on this planet a while. And it just seems to me that as I'm observing things on the news, that these things are happening, like these earthquakes of such large magnitude, volcanoes. Of course, these have always happened on the planet. It's not like this is new, but it seems as though they're happening with greater severity and frequency. We look right now in the news, Pakistan, and most of the country is flooded. I mean, the landmass the size of Florida in Pakistan is flooded, and people are starving, and people are homeless, and people are in great danger in Pakistan due to the weather. We can look at the tsunami on Christmas Day. We can look at Katrina. We can look at multiple different things. We all know with our climate what's going on. Anybody that spent a summer in Pennsylvania this summer knows how hot it's been. There are certain things that put us a little bit on edge. When we take the crash of the financial markets, we add that to it. We all got a lot to be nervous about. We all got a lot to be concerned about. But what bothers me most is that if 10% of the population believes that there could be potentially be some difficulties that lie attached to 2012, and people start to behave badly and hoarding things or gathering things or feel as though, what's the point? Why should I follow the law? It's all about survival. That in itself could, potentially fear itself could be one of the biggest things that we would face, is people behaving badly because they feel that this could happen. So that's another thing to consider, just the psyche of humanity, the psyche of the guy next door. Guns, the increase in the amount of guns that are being sold and ammunition and things like that. It all puts us all a little bit on edge. And so I personally believe that we, in order to go where we need to go, which is not about greed, it's not about the dollar, it's not about the rich, it's all about that every member on this planet is important, that no one should be able to pollute one square inch of this planet to make a dollar if it harms another. I think that we're going to a time where, you know, there is no separation. You know, that the pain for the people in Pakistan is our pain. That we all are one and we all need to take care of each other. In order to get to that place, and wars, just look at wars alone. I mean, what is the point of war, especially if there are global catastrophes that could actually take us all out? You know, something that threatens all of humanity, not just one specific country, but every member of the planet. So in order to maybe stop war in general, we have to be faced with perhaps maybe something greater than that, all of which serve to change our perception and change what we desire and what we want. And when we all change our desire of what we want, where we want peace and harmony and we want everyone to be happy and no one to suffer, and if we all start to, by seeing the difficulties that are going on, it gives us the desire to change what's going on. And it's by changing what goes on, this is where we move on into a different dimension. This is where we grow spiritually. This also offers all of us an opportunity to grow our soul by showing concern, care, and compassion for those that are less fortunate. This is a time, I think, on the planet where we all step up to the plate. Where we all step up to the plate and we look at each and every person on this planet as what we truly are, which are brothers and sisters. And it's about taking care of this planet and it's about taking care of each other. So whatever things come, it's just like those little lessons that we have in life, you know, when adversity comes along and if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger, or whatever happens in our lives, somehow it gives us a tremendous amount of wisdom or soul growth or helps to raise our consciousness. We can look at the little things that happen in our life and see how they have shifted us to become better people. Well, I think that whatever goes on the planet, again, is part of that helping to shift us to be better at being human and better, you know, to make humanity better. I, being a numerologist, look at the year 2000, and I said it back in 2000, that when we move into the twos, we're talking about working together. We're talking about being supportive. That's what that energy is talking about, working together, being supportive of each other. It's about peace. It's about harmony. It's about everyone working like it's not like the big kahuna. It's not the leader. It's all are one and everyone working as a group for whatever the purpose might be. And that when we move into the 2000, it's going to shift the energy of the planet and it's going to bring in this cooperation, that countries cooperate with each other and perhaps a time of great peace and harmony. And so I, for one, look at the future and I realize that right now it's a little bit shaky. And right now, you know, one would have perhaps a little bit of fear, but it's like let go of that because you need to celebrate whatever's going on and realize that eventually, when it's all said and done, you know, this really could, you know, the utopia that we all want. Where no one is suffering, where everyone is happy, where there's peace on this planet, where the planet is healthy. This is really the end result. And so sometimes to go through and get to where you need to be, there has to be some adversity. Somehow that's how I look at it. And I really think that there's nothing to be done. I mean, I do believe what Larry said about putting some preparations, having some water, some food, or perhaps an emergency contingency plan, or discuss it with your family. I think that's important. But I think more importantly, it's get up every morning and just take a deep breath and just send out your light, send out your love, send out your desire to the planet, to, you know, and to humanity, and hopes of this all turning itself around and eventually everything being peaceful. You know, maybe I'm a Pollyanna, that's probably true. But that's how what I do every day. I just get up and I send out love and hope that whatever this is that may, you know, with a solar maximum or whatever these various different scenarios, that it'll just end up in the long run making this world a better place. So with that, again, I really strongly suggest you go visit Larry's website, www.lawrenceejoseph.com. Check out those books. And I will be back again next week, different topic. different guests, and I hope you all have a pleasant night. God bless you all. Good night.
Thank you for joining us this evening. For more information, or if you wish to contact Allison for a reading, please visit www.visiblebynumbers.com or email Allison at alynch@ptd.net. Have a wonderful evening and be well.